Many immigrants' rights supporters implore people to think of immigrants not in terms of nationality or country of origin, but rather simply as fellow human beings.
Empathy towards other fellow humans is at the heart of Ravine Arora's message. Arora is a former refugee who once worked with Mother Teresa and now lives in Arizona and heads the Think Human Global Initiative.
Arora was in Milwaukee as the keynote speaker at the International Institute of Wisconsin's World Citizen Celebration, and he joined us in the studio recently. It is an honor to speak with you.
Thank you for having me here today, and I appreciate the opportunity of speaking to your listeners.
So let me ask you kind of a big picture question. When you, say, get on an airplane and sit down next to someone, if that person is being talkative and asks you what you do, what your work is, what's the first thing that you tell them?
Mostly I don't like to talk about myself, because what happens is people end up talking more about themselves than about others. And I have learned to listen, to understand, then to respond quickly, and to just do idle chatter, just so that the time of the flight is covered, basically, because sometimes it's much ado about nothing. But if they do, I do extend a warm hand of, how are you? And my name is Ravine. And I let him or her initiate. But I will initiate if I'm sitting down, if I'm on the aisle seat, if somebody's there, I'll introduce myself. Is it okay if I'm not intrusive, if they have a bag there or something? I try to be as accommodating and friendly in the 2-hour flight or a 1-hour flight or a 10-hour flight. That's about my culture. It comes from upbringing. It's respecting other person's space. I won't be too loud on the phone, take away their time or space, or, they are doing something, but that's about it.
Well, and it seems like that philosophy would inform the work of someone who is working on, if you will, humanity.
Absolutely. It's about respect and dignity of the other person's space. It's not about me. It's the why. The why is basically defines that once you can define the why, my purpose is in humanitarian work is to be human and to be humane, to understand if the other person is, let's say, their arm or the elbow is sitting on my thing, on my seat rest.
The armrest, right?
Armrest. Am I going to push him away, or am I going to be tolerant? Am I going to be patient, be accommodating? If I don't need that armrest, would I just make myself a little bit, more accommodating? Yes, because that's the basis of everything, because everybody's in a shared space. We are not in an island. In a shared space, the plane is a classic example. With 300, 200, 150 come together, it's part of our life, okay, and that we are spending time together. Okay, we may not talk to each other, but we are, again, passengers on the same train. It's the same journey we're undertaking, and that's how we define life. It's the passengers on my life. The life is a journey, and these are the passengers on our train that we co-share the space. We don't know when our station will come if we're on a train. So I would say thank you for being a good passenger, co-passenger on my journey, too.
So if the why is the key question that you are interested in, let me ask you, if you don't mind talking about yourself a little bit, why is this the work that you do?
Because my beginnings are very humble. I'm a refugee child from Calcutta. My parents are refugees. I was born in a refugee camp. So once a refugee, people say you're always a refugee. But I feel I wear that badge of honor gracefully, because it shows courage. It shows strength. It shows victory that you have taken a stand not to be oppressed. You'd rather further go into the unknown and take your chances than to be subservient to the circumstances or be a falling prey, because we are not a pawn on the chessboard. You are human. So what it has taught me was resilience. It taught me tolerance. It taught me patience. It taught me understanding. So as I grew, you know, work with Mother Teresa and working with humanitarian agencies, Lions Club, Leo Clubs, Rotary, Kiwanis. I've done it all because all roads lead to the same. It's about service, about understanding each other, about caring for each other. And so when the opportunity came from becoming a refugee, from a refugee to a refuge, I said the best thing I can do is create a global initiative that will teach people, teach the younger people about respect, about caring for each other, because we are not an island. We are an ocean. Every drop counts. Every drop counts. Serving each other, being with each other, understanding each other's, because that's where the cultural dexterity comes in, because we are so connected that multiculturalism, which results from cultural dexterity of diversity of thought, diversity of perspective, diversity of opinion, diversity of dissent, what I call it, I encourage dissent, is to unite, not despite our differences, but through our differences. We have to stay united because, after all, we are all human.
Where were your parents refugees from?
When India was split, they became refugees in their own country, basically, because they, for thousands of years, their ancestors had lived in Punjab, which was the cradle of human civilization, which Mark Twain had rightly called. The British split it based on religion in 1947. They lost everything. They were highly educated. Education was a key there because they always felt that education may be an ornament in prosperity, but it's your refuge in adversity. And when Britain split, my dad always felt that, no, nothing will happen, nothing will happen. But based on religious strife, a million people were killed. And he took the last refugee train that was there. It took him months. Mom and dad were split, and they came to Calcutta. And dad had to play dead in a refugee train just to stay alive because mom was carrying me, and I was born in a refugee camp. So that scar still stays with me. I bear those scars 70 years later.
What did it take, given those circumstances, first what your parents had to live through, and secondly, the way you grew up, what did it take to learn patience in that environment?
Because of the cultural exclusion, the social exclusion, cultural exclusion, because it was more a stigma. When you don't have it, people don't want to, you know, be with you. People, there is a class system. Like we used to have a color system, your class. We had a caste system, and then the rich, the haves and the have-nots. When that happens, when you go to a poor school, you play with the slum kids, you know, you cannot. You've never been invited to a birthday party till you, you know, because your parents can't afford to give you a gift, you know, or you can't afford a school bus. Those were the times when you learn resilience. You learn tolerance and patience with yourself because you've got to come out. And the only way out of poverty is not out, is up. Because poverty will lead to, hunger. Hunger will lead to starvation. And do you want to starve yourself? Starvation will lead to malnutrition, which will lead again to lack of education. Did I want that life? I said no. So I'll have to be patient, make books my refuge, make do with little, come out and sustain myself. It was more for me than for anything else. I did not think much about others who had more than me. I began to realize that I have to be grateful for what I have and not what I prefer. I am in a world that I didn't choose, but this is the world I live in, not what I prefer. So that taught me a whole lot of patience. And working with Mother Teresa, of course, reinforced the values of kindness and, you know, humility and tolerance. So those were my big takeaways.
How did you happen to come to work with Mother Teresa?
I went to school in a Jesuit school, and that time she was known as Sister Teresa. And if we volunteered, we stepped up and did something else, then we would get credits for a movie credit because movies were expensive, even though they cost like a couple of pennies in those days. But we could not afford a movie ticket. So my first movie was like Gunfight at the OK Corral or Around the World in 80 Days, or Ten Commandments. And to be able to go there, I had to do say, do something for others. Okay, the only, and Sister Teresa used to live about a mile away from our house, and she would help us, my sisters and us, to go to charity. My first full breakfast, actually, was with Mother Teresa, because I had never had an omelet before, an egg, because Mom would add water to the milk to stretch it. So there is how I met, and I saw that there were people who had less than me, much less than me. I was still there. So that led to a long association of 16, 18 years when I became the president of Leo Clubs, Lions Clubs in Calcutta, working with Rotaract, working with children. And then everything centered around projects and centered around involving ourselves with social work, what we used to call it. We started a night school with Mother Teresa, blessed. And 50 years later, I was there last month to receive Mother Teresa International Award, Service Award for my work with refugees and humanitarian work in 90 countries. That school still exists. It's got 25,000 students, and it still exists. And that, you know, completed my one part of my journey, because what I learned, the basic values that I learned then, haven't changed. Because the poor don't need, we talk about poor people, we talk about poverty, but how many of us like the smell of the poor? Very few. How many of us can hug a poor man? How many of us can hug a leper? So because we bleed the same.
Can you talk about how Think Human goes about the work that it does?
Think Human is an initiative. We don't want to ask people to join. We want them to feel that in them. So it works through workshops, it works through seminars, it works through my own message. What it is telling people about empathy. We cannot feel. Sympathy is an action. Empathy is the feeling. Okay? Empathy concerns the heart. Start treating people. Don't look on the title, don't look at the color, don't look at the sexual leanings, don't look at gender, don't look at minorities, because at the end of it, there's only one race. That's a human race, you know? And we need to be thinking human. Before we do the command and control politics, we should have empathy.
Over the years that you have been involved in this work, the question I have is whether there is something about 2018, the year that we're in, that makes it either easier or harder for you to help people understand perhaps the difference between sympathy and empathy.
It's a very sensitive subject right now, because the times, as hard as they seem or as dark as they seem, I still feel there is humanity, underlying humanity. If we take politics out of our thinking, of our life, if we take care of our blind spots, internal blind spots, we don't have to be politically correct. We can relate to people. We are so globally connected, interdependent on each other today, that other than thinking human, other than thinking logically with our heart and head to collaborate, you know, the result would be disaster, because everybody's trigger happy. Everybody's technologically advanced today. We can't take things for granted. The only way we can take things for granted is through tolerance, through patience, through understanding the perspective, because we have to bring them around. Persuasive means what I call it. 2018 is going to be a very defining year. It's not about our summit with North Korea, or it's not about our summit with other things that are happening. We are polarized. Okay, it's not the North-South thing. The world wasn't made North-South. World was made north, south, east, west. You know, the globe is round. Earth is round. So what goes around will come around to bite us, because that's what typically happens. Because if we try to do something, it comes back in a different way. If we say we raise minimum wages, what happens, Mitch? We raise, the product goes up. Okay? The cost of the product goes up. If we say now we need to compete, we're going to cut the jobs. Productivity suffers, then social welfare. So we have to realize that we are so interconnected, interdependent on every action or every thought Because at the end of it, our thoughts become our words. Our words become our actions. Our actions turn into habits. And habits become our character. And that's what defines it. So we have to remember, you know, the basic fundamental thing is tolerance.
Ravin Arora, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Best of luck with your work.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Ravin Arora is the founder and CEO of Think Human Global Initiative. He was in Milwaukee to give the keynote speech at the International Institute of Wisconsin's World Citizen Celebration, and we spoke with him then.